As we look at the 8th president of the United States in this election year, we come to the life of Martin Van Buren. And before we look at all the fun facts that we usually do as we're starting out looking at these presidents, I thought of one that is something that you may not know, and a word that originated with this individual that you will probably use today. You've probably used it pretty much every day in your life as you have had an understanding of language. But listen to this as I'm reading from the book Martin Van Buren by Ted Widmer. He says this: "For all the noise and heat generated by the 1840 campaign, its most lasting legacy may have been one of the shortest words in the English language. In the spring of 1839, the phrase "okay" began to circulate in Boston as shorthand for "old correct," a slangy way of saying "all right." Early in 1840, Van Buren's supporters began to use the trendy expression as a way to identify their candidate, whom they labored to present as "old Kinderhook," perhaps in imitation of Andrew Jackson's "old hickory." Van Buren even wrote "okay" next to his signature, and it spread like wildfire. And to this day, it is a universal symbol of something elemental in the American character: informality, optimism, efficiency, call it what you will. It is spoken 7 times a day by the average citizen, 2 billion utterances overall, and of course, it goes well beyond our borders. If there is a single sound America has contributed to the Esperanto of global communication, this is it. It is audible everywhere, in a taxi cab in Paris, in a cafe in Istanbul, in the languid early seconds of the Beatles' Revolution, when John Lennon steps up to the microphone and arrestingly calls the meeting to order. There are worse legacies that a defeated presidential candidate could claim. And so as we come to this life, we understand that Martin grew up in Kinderhook, New York, where his father was a tavern owner and farmer. His family primarily spoke Dutch at home. Martin was intelligent, but only received a formal education to the age of 14. He learned law by working and apprenticing for attorneys in New York. And in 1803, he passed the bar and became a lawyer. He became involved in politics at a young age, and when he was just 17, he attended his first political convention. He became attracted to politics and soon entered political office himself, and he became a key player in New York state politics. Many considered him a master manipulator of machine politics. He also helped to start another political tool called the spoil system. This was where supporters of a candidate would receive good jobs in the government as a reward when their candidate won. And so in 1815, Van Buren became the New York Attorney General. He then was elected to the U.S. Senate, representing New York, and he was a strong supporter of Andrew Jackson during this time, helping him in the North during the presidential election. And after Jackson was elected, Van Buren became his Secretary of State. And as Van Buren headed into the presidency, Andrew Jackson supported him for president because he had decided not to run for a third term. Van Buren won the election of 1836, becoming the 8th president of the United States. But the sad part is that his presidency was defined by the Panic of 1837. Just a few short months after he became president, the stock market crashed. The economy ground to a halt as banks failed, people lost their jobs, companies went out of business. And the failure was largely due to policies that had been set forth by his predecessor, President Jackson. And there's little that Martin could do about that. He also had some other events that were tied to his presidency. He continued with Jackson's policy of moving American Indians to new lands in the West, The Trail of Tears took place during his administration, in which the Cherokee Indians were marched across the country from North Carolina to Oklahoma. Many thousands of Cherokees died during that trip. He actually refused to allow Texas to become a state, and that helped to ease tensions between the northern and southern states at that time. He also pushed for peace with Great Britain when he settled a dispute over the border between Maine and Canada. And he set up a system of bonds to help pay for the national debt. He tried to regain the White House two more times. In 1844, he came close to regaining the Democratic nomination, but came up short to James Knox Polk. And then in 1848, he ran under a new party called the Free Soil Party. Well, in the book by John M. Wiley, where it says The Faith of the Presidents, he talks a little bit about that, these facts concerning Van Buren. Van Buren was a staunch Democratic Republican. This man, by the way, was the first man who actually was born in the new country, the Americas. He was born in such a time after the Declaration of Independence, and he was the first president that was the case. Well, he was in this party called the Democratic Republican, and it's not two parties. We hear that today, but this was one party. And originally, Democratic Republicans were the main opposing force to the other popular party in American politics of the day, which were the Federalists. Interestingly, Van Buren merged away from his earlier party to align with the Free Soil Party due to his ongoing convictions of the evils of slavery, but eventually even that party dissolved for the sake of the creation of the Republican Party. Politics pretty much consumed most of his life. You could almost say politics was his religion. Speaking to the New York legislature, as he had just become governor of the state in 1829, Van Buren insisted, quote, "But relying as I know I may upon your able and patriotic cooperation, trusting to the indulgence of my fellow citizens, and looking for direction and support to that kind providence by whose favor the humblest instrument may be made to accomplish the greatest ends, I pledge myself to you and our constituents to make every effort of which I am capable to promote the interest and advance the honor of the state," end of quote. Writing a letter around the same time, he declared, quote, "I shall do the best I can in whatever relates to my office and leave the result to Providence and the people," end of quote. One of his more commonly used terms for God was Providence, as he saw himself as part of God's sovereign plan to fulfill his will. The historian Jason K. Duncan has written on the impact that Martin Van Buren had in the more generalized acceptance of Roman Catholics into the political and social norms of American civilization. He's citing Van Buren as one of the most powerful components. You see, Van Buren wasn't Catholic. His whole denomination had broken away from that. He was part of the Dutch Reform group. But Van Buren was adamant about tolerating people of other religious persuasions, even when his own party didn't always find this to be comfortable. He says in his inaugural address as president, he submitted this, quote, "From a small community, we've risen to a people powerful in numbers and in strength, but with our increase has gone hand in hand the progress of just principles. The privileges, civil and religious, of the humblest individual are still sacredly protected at home. And while the valor and fortitude of our people have removed far from us the slightest apprehension of foreign power, they have not yet induced us in a single instance to forget what is right." Grinder and Shaw, in their book, The Presidents and Their Faith, talk about the fact that he was born into a Dutch Reformed family. Both his parents were members of the Dutch Reformed Church, and his mother was considered to be especially devout. His father was that innkeeper. And in 1807, Van Buren married Hannah Hose, who also was Dutch Reformed and also considerably devout. Well, she died 12 years into their marriage, having delivered four sons, and so Van Buren did not remarry, and he became the third widower to enter the White House. He was a lifelong churchgoer. However, there is just no evidence of his ever having formally joining a church. The other Dutch Reformed president was Teddy Roosevelt. He was reported to have attended the Dutch Reformed Church while growing up in Kinderhook, and his funeral in 1862 was held at that particular church with a Dutch Reformed pastor and Van Buren's close friend Alonzo Peter, the Episcopal Bishop of Pennsylvania, conducting the service. At Van Buren's funeral, the only music was the hymn, "O God, Our Help in Ages Past." He apparently, as in the case of most presidents, never had any particular, much less keen, interest in spiritual or theological matters. There's no record of any public confession of faith or church membership or record of baptism, and he left no particular musings on religious or theological matters. At his inauguration, a Bible was opened to Proverbs 3:17, which states, "Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace." And in his inaugural address of March 4th, 1837, we find our eighth president hoping for the sustaining support of an ever-watchful and beneficent providence. He concluded his speech by saying, "I only look to the gracious protection of the divine being, whose strengthening support I humbly solicit, and whom I fervently pray to look down upon us all. May it be among the dispensations of his providence to bless our beloved country with honors and with length of days. May her ways be ways of pleasantness, and all her paths be peace." End of quote. So he's clearly not unusual as far as presidential rhetoric, and especially when it comes to inaugural addresses. There are no exclusionary, sectarian, or precise theological messages offered. Rather, Van Buren utters general, if not gentle, references to, once again, providence or God or some kind of supreme / divine being. Such references do not prove that Van Buren lacked a specific religious commitment. At least they reflect the already established cultural and political expectation that the chief executive situate the country within the place of some kind of benevolent deity. And so that's what we find here, and this is typical of the time. And so we're just grateful for the power of the spiritual life of our country as it continues to grow.